Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Zero Ducks Given. And it is a very, very, very busy episode today because there's lots to get through, including, of course, another stunning England victory for the boys in the test team, a women's test that is underway, and the apparent impending retirement as England ODI captain and white ball captain of Owen Morgan as well, and some other nonsense as well, I'm sure. First of all, though, let's come to Finney. So at the time of recording, it is Monday evening and Finney is currently on his second day of his game for Sussex. And Finney, the groundsman's revenge continues. You said earlier on in this season that after the county game got lots of criticism and lots of stick for preparing green puddings for the last 10 years that completely ruined the test side, that the groundsmen have taken it personally and this year, they've replied by making the biggest road you could ever possibly imagine. So you had to bowl for 151 overs, Sussex against Derbyshire, as they piled on 551 for eight declared. However, you did take a wicket. You've got Masood, who's been scoring a ridiculous amount of runs this season. So you've got one positive to take away from those 151 overs, Finney.
Yeah, it's been a slightly tricky couple of days down here on the south coast. I think the groundsmen and the ball manufacturers have decided that bowlers aren't going to have it their way this season so far. It's just been really difficult, to be honest. The balls go soft after about 15 overs and then it becomes really hard to take a wicket. And it's only really errors or batting errors that will lead to wickets. After that point, as we've seen in the test match, the balls have been changed a number of times, which has been a big problem this year as well. So, yeah, a slightly difficult few days, but we've made a decent start. We're 150 for three with me still in the hutch waiting to go. So we're hopeful that a good day's batting tomorrow will salvage the game for us, I think, because winning it from here will be a tricky proposition.
Now, you spent all pre-season telling us you were batting in the nets like a right-handed Matthew Hayden. You said that sentence several times, and yet this surely now, you've not hit a single six this season. Surely now,
well, we've not really batted, have I?
Well, you've just said it's an absolute road. You're probably going to get a bat tomorrow. Now,
well, there's a 35 yard boundary one way as well.
I'm
going to have that in the back of my mind. And George Garton's flat overlooks the ground that way. So my plan is to try and put one into his house, I think.
Oh, is he in those flats that literally overlook the ground on that side at Hove there?
Yeah, on one of the sides. I mean, I'm not going to give away the precise location of his flat, but yeah, his flat overlooks the ground. He's and you can see him watching sometimes when he's not playing in the game. You can see him watching from his living room with clothes on, though. Norcross would do it naked, though, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would. Well, largely naked. I'm absolutely staggered. Really, in the week of Bazball, Finney, and it has been a week of Bazball. You're saying, oh, we can't win it from here. Derbyshire only got 552. New Zealand got 553 at Nottingham. What are you going to do?
This is a four-day game.
I know it's a four-day game.
Yeah, you've got too big for domestic cricket now that you're a BT Sports commentator once.
Well, three times, actually.
You're a BT commentator once because nobody else was available during a pandemic.
Yes. All those things are true. All those things are true. But were you a BT commentator when you had the opportunity, when there was nobody there? And no, you weren't. You were on Radio fucking X at 10 o'clock in the morning. Some of us were coining it in on the Ashes. But now then, I just want to take issue with this, right? So Johnny Bairstow, if you take his last three innings, right, he, in an average day's test cricket, would score 680 runs. That's how fast he's currently going. He scored 350 runs and 270 balls. Listen to Bazball. Joe Root is whiff-waffing balls over Kingdom Come, playing some of the craziest shots you've ever seen. Listen to Bazball. Hang around with Baz. Understand the truth. Tomorrow is day three of the game, right? You could easily score, 580, 600? I mean, that's only just under six and over. I mean, that's pretty much, I would say, domestic cricket on a flat track with a 35-yard boundary. That would get you a lead of, 200, right? Scoreboard pressure, bat on a little bit the next day, maybe get up to about 800, put them in. You come steaming down the hill.
Then they knock them off 40 overs? That seems to be the way forward at the moment. Well,
they won't knock anything off. No, then they'll get the fear. Look at New Zealand. They'll get the fear because you're playing Bazball, but Derbyshire are playing, you know, Kim Barnett ball. They've got Mickey Arthur as their head coach. Yeah, but he's not Baz, though. He's there playing Mickey Ball, exactly. And Mickey Ball, although a little funky, you know, George Clinton and all that, Bootsy Collins, always on the one, but not as funky as what you guys should be playing. And you've got some funky characters in that side.
You've got to outfunk them. You've got to, why don't you walk into the change room tomorrow and say, guys, I've spoken to Norcross and we're going to outfunk them. Plus, you've got Rizwan, 54 not out overnight. There's a man who was born, he was born to Bazball.
He was born to funk. He was born to funk.
Exactly. He's more funky than Nile Rodgers.
Yeah, you could. He played a couple of funky shots today as well, but
he could get 300 tomorrow.
Yeah, my preference would be that he knuckles down and just gives me a day off my feet. That would be lovely.
Right. Well, you see, that's the thing, and that's why you will never get in the Bazball team, Finny. Because
I'm too old. You just told me I was old and past it. So of course I'm never going to get in Bazball.
I didn't say you were old and past it.
I said I was a washed up old fag.
in your own brain, you are. And I'm here to tell you that you're not. I've been in the team hotel for the last 6 days. And I tell you, I'm looking at transformed men. I saw the eyes of Jimmy Anderson being genuinely enthusiastic about what he was doing. He's loving it. Stuart Broad, loving it. He got 42 off 36. He just went hell for leather. Jack Leach hit two fours off his first two balls. Jack Leach smashed it over a long off. This is a bloke who had his most famous innings is one off a million balls on the same stadium. First ball, late cut. Second ball, smash it over long off. This, my friend, is the way forward.
Yeah, but that doesn't change the fact that, as Finney said,
they're all loving it.
Because I'm here to play witness to the fact that before we started recording the podcast, you did call Finney a washed up old fuck. So Finney's
I was goading him into realizing his Bazball brilliance, right? So obviously you start with that. And I'm not sure if Baz necessarily does that, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does. You sort of start with the outrageously crude, classically masculine insult. And then you go, you see, there's a kernel of truth there, but it's bollocks because you're going to grab hold of this. You're going to grab hold of the washed up has-been and you're going to come charging down that hill. You're going to bowl 91 miles an hour. When you go out there with your Woodstock bat, you are going to absolutely smash that ball into George Garton's garden. Does he have a garden? Well, you know. Call it a garden, probably a little roof terrace or something. Smash it into that. And that's what you're going to do. And you're going to love every minute of doing it. You're going to play with the broadest beaming grin of fulfillment that you've ever seen. All the players in this place.
I fielded 150 overs over the last 48 hours.
I don't want to hear those negative thoughts. I don't want to hear that. Baz will tell you, it's okay. It was 150 overs. You'll never get them back, but it's great for your legs.
Now, is that Coney ball or Baz ball?
What can we do with the next 150 overs, Finney? We can make them better, more glorious.
Well, Ben Stokes has come out and said, Ben Stokes has said that he hopes that England's approach is going to send a message to county players, and that when they're selecting England squads in the future, the way that a player plays and his method will be taken into consideration, will be in selectors' minds. So, Finney, you just need to go out there and tee off when you go out to bat tomorrow. Just go at first ball, try that Joe Root little reverse ramp that he played off Wagner, mate. That's your way back into the fold.
Today, Sam Curran made his first class century, right? 125 off 75 balls.
You know what he's doing?
Baz is a cricket whisperer. You know, like you've got your horse whisperers and your dog whisperers. He's a cricketer whisperer. And he's whispered to the entirety of English cricket. And they are all going to come and join him like the Pied fucking Piper. You are all going to be smashing the balls to all parts. I know that's not music to the ears of a gnarled old fast bowler, but you're going to have to take that in your stride and learn a couple of new tricks. Well, you know, or just do what's in you. You've got the tricks. You've got the tricks, Finney. You've hit as big as six at Brisbane. That's how big you are. You're huge. You're massive. You can make the comeback. He's eating, of course, now. So we won't get any sense out of him.
I'll be honest, Norcross.
I just didn't know whether that had finished or not.
No, to be honest, Norcross, because we spent the last 5 minutes trying to pump up Stephen Finn. I hope Brendan McCullum gets a better reaction in the England dressing room than you just got. You spent 5 minutes trying to build him up. When you finished, he looked at you, chewed some pizza and went, "Have you finished?"
I think McCullum... Well, I'm not Baz. I mean, only Baz is Baz.
No, Daniel, nobody's comparing you to Brendan McCullum. Don't you worry. You don't need to keep insisting that you're not Baz.
Finney, it could be Baz's grandfather.
Fuck you. Now, Finney, we've talked around the game a little bit, but we do need to talk about another ridiculous England victory. I mean, it's not normal to chase 296 on a day 5 pitch in a test match. I actually think this chase was more insane than the Trent Bridge one, because the Trent Bridge one was a mad sort of session at the end there where Bairstow went berserk and Stokes went berserk. But this was just the easiest run chase ever. 54.2 overs they took to chase 296 to win on a day 5 pitch. This is an England side, basically, for all the positive things that have been said about this England side over the last 3 weeks and all the compliments, I actually don't think they've got enough praise. This is absolutely insane, because we're talking about a side who couldn't buy a run, couldn't score a run. They had one win in the last 17 test matches. And 3 games in a row, they've chased a load of runs and they've done it at an absolute click as well. Can you believe, Finney? I mean, you talk about 4-year plans and planning for the next Ashes series. Can you believe how quickly this England side looks unrecognisable?
Oh, look, I think no one ever doubted, I don't think, that the talent was there to be able to compete with the best teams in the world. I don't think I've ever questioned that when I've been asked about this. I've always thought that the domestic structure doesn't lend itself towards people giving themselves the best chance in international cricket. And then also it's being able to empower those people once you get there to be able to play in a manner that competes with other people. And I think that that shows the magic of someone like Brendan McCullum, having him come in and just free people up to go out there and you talk about it, expressing yourself or showing people what you can do. But saying that and then doing it are two very, very different things. And only very few people have the gift to be able to allow people to go out there and play the way that England have played in the last few weeks. And I think all credit to every single one of them for buying into it. There's guys who won't be certain about their international careers buying into that manner of playing. And there are old timers who've played cricket a number of different ways now also buying into that way of playing. So, yeah, I think they deserve a lot of praise for the way they've done it. And also against the World Test champions, which I don't think should be underestimated, because when we looked at the series that England were playing at the beginning of the summer, you'd look at all three series, New Zealand, India and South Africa, and say they're going to be bloody hard. But now you can't really see anyone stopping them.
Three of the fastest 7 50-plus over innings in Test cricket history have been played by England in their last 3 innings. That is ridiculous. The last innings at Trent Bridge, and the first two innings at Headingley. New Zealand scored 657 runs in this match in 222 overs. That's what? Three and over. Just under three and over. Thanks to some good attritional bowling, by the way, by the likes of Jack Leach and Matt Potts, who was superb.
Mm.
And you're watching one test match when they're playing, right? 222 overs New Zealand batted. England batted 121 overs, basically, give or take a ball. That is ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. They've got 658 runs in 100 overs fewer. That is absolutely monstrously mental. Today, Johnny Bairstow hit the fastest 50 that's ever been hit in Test cricket in England. Ian Botham holds England's record. It was in Delhi with 28 balls. He hit it in 30 balls. He didn't just hit it in 30 balls. He hit it when he came into bat on the last day when Ollie Pope, the overnight batter on 82, has just been bowled by Borders, jagged back a considerable distance from Tim Southee. And the start of the day, oh, we need 113 to win, they're thinking. Just get yourself in. Ollie Pope's out within two runs. Oh, could be nervous. Next over went for 17 runs. I mean, that is insane. That is just absolutely ridiculous. You know, Johnny Bairstow's response to being put under pressure is to just plant his foot down the ground and whack Trent Bolt over his head for six. He hit two of his first three balls for four. And they weren't like, you know, edges or anything. They were like controlled wallops. This is a totally different way of playing cricket, right? The numbers are staggering. New Zealand, not a bad side. You know, Mitchell and Blundell will get all the plaudits. But Trent Bolt bowled the most dangerous spell, according to CricViz, in its analysis of the last 16 years, ball-by-ball analysis, the most expected wicket spell in their database, and reduced England to 55 for six. They were 55 for six, right? From that point on, they were what? They were 601 for seven in 104 overs. I mean, that is absolutely fucking nuts.
You mentioned Johnny Bairstow there. I mean, his second innings, but I want to come to that because the first innings, I mean, 55 for six, England were off 11.5 overs. And as you say, Trent Bolt was unplayable at times. So 11.5 overs, England were 55 for six. And then just under 46 overs later, that's less than an ODI, England were 296 for seven when the next wicket fell. I mean, this is like, we've never seen this before in Test cricket.
A debutant, right? You know, and you can say, yeah, he should have been out LBW. The umpire should have given it. They should have.
He also played and missed about 200,000 times, but who cares?
But he also defended rather well, didn't he? He defended Bolt. Bolt was in the middle of that terrifying spell. You know, Overton came in the 12th over. Opening batters, you'd right like to think, might last 12 overs. Not have to come in at number eight and face the 12th over. These balls may be absolutely shit, and we'll talk about that shortly. But when they're 12 overs old, they've got a bit to them. And he defended superbly to start with, and then he thwacked it to all parts. I mean, that was the most ludicrous partnership I've ever watched. 241, England's highest ever seventh-wicket partnership. In the top 10 seventh-wicket partnerships of all time, I'm pretty damn sure none of them came at 5.5 and over.
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. Vinny, I want to ask you, I mean, it's difficult because it's been 3 weeks and it's been amazing and the numbers are obscene. And we've talked before on this podcast about the fact that the white ball game is slowly seeping into the test game. But you look at what England's white ball team has done over the last decade under Owen Morgan, and we'll talk about a bit later on, and how other teams have sort of now followed suit, and the one-day international scores are getting ridiculous now. 50 overs is now just a 2020, just way longer. Do you think this is a watershed moment for test cricket and that teams are going to go around and look at this and be like, well, maybe, you know, we all play IPL and white ball and franchise cricket, and maybe we're capable of this sort of cricket as well?
To be honest, no, I don't think so, because I think that elements of those games will find their way into four-day cricket. But I think there are a number of mitigating factors at the moment in England that mean that there are a shedload of runs being scored all over the country. And I think that it's lending itself to that style of playing. I think the balance will be readdressed at some stage, whether that's the balls or the pitches, you know. But I think that there are certainly elements of the white ball game that will keep finding their way into four-day cricket. The element of a fourth innings run chase, I think, where people think negatively in the first instance about surviving and then seeing if they can get there, I think there'll be a lot more belief, having seen England play the way that they are at the moment, there'll be a lot more belief that people can actually go and chase those sorts of runs down without a care in the world. And I think that frees people up to be able to put bowlers under pressure like you would in a white ball game. So, yeah, I certainly think it's going to make it more entertaining, maybe not necessarily for bowlers, because you usually relish bowling on that fourth or fifth day where the pitch is maybe going up and down or maybe spinning or reverse swinging or something, but we're not really seeing any of that. Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting time to see how they do try and readdress that balance, I think.
England have done a thing in this game where they've sort of said to their white ball cricketers, like Bairstow and Root to a degree, because he's part of that, and Stokes. Do you know what it's like batting in the power play? It's really nice, isn't it? Because there's only two people out. Well, Test cricket is like that all the time until you're five or six down, because they're trying to get you out. So if you're doing a run chase, they can't afford to put everyone on the boundary. They've got to try and get a wicket. They've got two sips and a gully in. They've got three in a ring. They've got a couple on the leg side. You've got long leg and you've got a sweeper somewhere. That's about it. So they're sort of saying to white ball cricketers, you know how lovely it is when that situation, you can go over the top, you can smash it over the infield. Well, this is your chance. You can do the same thing in a test match. And they're allowed to do that because, as Finney says, the pitches have been benign, Trent Bridges especially so, but actually Headingley a bit. Incidentally, New Zealand didn't pick a spinner, which would have made quite a difference, because Jack Leach was genuinely getting it to turn quite a lot in New Zealand's second innings, and they didn't have a spinner. And so you kind of, and the balls are absolutely diabolical. I mean, they're so dreadful. 15 balls have been changed in three test matches. And again, you know, Finney knows this absolutely. And the player's been talking about it here. They go, they're screwed basically after about, well, they could be screwed after about 15 to 20 overs, frankly, but the umpire doesn't want to change them until a little bit later. And then you get something that will work for about an over or two that's changed, but then that's just spongy and soft again into benign pitches because grounds wouldn't have been making them that way, plus drainage, plus whatever. And you do that against a depleted attack with Bolt and Southee and no, you know, Wagner undercooked and a part-time spinner, then obviously it's a very different proposition, isn't it, from Bumrah next week.
I think that's
Shami and Siraj. I mean,
I think that's going to be the key.
Jadeja or whatever.
Is seeing, you know, we look, I mean, Ben Stokes' innings in the first innings was so crap. He just decided to come out and just decide to track every single ball and try and hit it for six. Even in a T20, you don't bat like that. It was absolutely brainless, and he picked out mid-off. And at the time, I was kind of annoyed, but I was like, oh, it's difficult because this is Baz Baller. But there is no question, and India will be the first, you know, I'm sure, massive test of this, as you say, in a week, and then South Africa at the summer. There's going to be times where Baz Ball goes horrifically wrong, and they're going to have to try and get that balance right. So we'll enjoy it while it happens at the moment. But Finney, I want to ask you about these cricket balls that Dan just mentioned there, because you've got a bee in your bonnet, and let's be honest, you're not exactly jolly old Saint Nick at the best of times, but you're pissed off about these cricket balls this season. So first of all, what's going on? Why are they behaving this way? And as somebody who's bowled with them a lot, what are they doing? What's going wrong with them?
So the first batch was, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about two batches of balls this summer, haven't there? And the first batch were small and they were soft and they went out of shape very, very quickly. So even if they did go out of shape, they would still go through the little metal hoops that the umpires have. The balls would still go through there. So you just had to keep bowling with them, because the rule is that if they don't go through the hoops, then you can change it. But if they do go through the hoops, then what are you saying, Dan?
It's not entirely true. It's got to go through one hoop and it mustn't go through the other.
Right. Well, I watched an umpire struggle to put them through both today and he changed the ball. So, the first batch of balls were small. So even if they were out of shape, we had some earlier in the season that looked like triangles, and you just couldn't you couldn't get the umpire to change it because it would just always fit through the hoops, no matter what shape it was. And then this second batch of balls have actually kept their shape a lot better, but it's like bowling with a beach ball that's had the air sucked out of it after about 20 overs. And they're so big that they don't go through the hoops, both hoops. So we actually got ours changed today for one of, but because these balls haven't been used enough to produce spares, we had it changed today after a little while. And then they bought one of the old batch of balls out and it just turned into a rectangle in about three overs. And then you're bowling with a soft rectangle. So yeah, it does very much mean that the first 15 overs of an innings are dangerous for the bowlers. And you try and take wickets and you hump wickets. But then as soon as you're through that initial period, you really are relying on a poor bit of decision-making for a batter or a very, very good piece of bowling to get someone out, which may have swung slightly the other way from the last few years.
Well, it's pretty shambolic that this is happening, though, surely. So, Norcross, why is this happening? There's rumours that the guy who stitches the balls together has changed or something, but it can't be one bloke that stitches all the Duke's balls in the world.
No, they can't be. Alex Hartley has opined. And I'm minded to believe that there's a kernel of truth in this, because Hartley's an astute woman, and she normally gets things virtually right. But it can't be the case that there is one person who's stitching all the balls, and that the stitching isn't tight enough is the theory, which allows which makes the balls go softer, because more material and moisture from all over the ground gets into the ball and therefore allows it to get softer. When it's hit, it then gets whacked into various shapes, so it doesn't keep its integrity in the same way. Now, I imagine what's happening is that there's more than one stitcher, 7 or 8 or 9 or 10. The stitching has moved from England to, I don't know where, it might be Bangladesh or Pakistan, I'm not quite sure. So people who hadn't been doing it before are now doing it, is my understanding. And so there's, you know, a bit of learning on the job that's got to be done, I'm guessing. The issue for me is, how many balls have we got left from the old batches that were good? And can we run a test series with them? Because I reckon you need 8 balls per test, and there are 4 test matches left. You need 8, right? I mean, you might need 10, but 8 ought to be enough. So if we had 32 balls from another era, can we just bring them in now? Because these balls are so shit. It's why the over rate's so crap. Because understandably, bowlers are just like, what is this nonsense that I'm bowling with? And handing it to the umpire. And we get a bit annoyed about it. The crowd get a bit annoyed about it. But if you're the bowler, of course, you don't want to bowl with this filth. And it is really rubbish. I mean, it's way worse than the balls we play with in Surrey Championship cricket, is the noise that I'm hearing. That's a problem.
I mean, I could have told you this was going to happen, and I should have stepped in. And this is all actually my fault, what's happening. I'll tell you why. Because, you know, at every cricket club, there's a knobhead fast bowler who turns up at Winter Nets with a new box of brand new nuts just for himself. Well, for the first time in my life, I was that knobhead. And I treated myself to a box of Duke's brand new cricket balls in the winter that I turned up to at a net session. And the first one I used genuinely has got like a square ridge just inside the seam, pretty much the whole way around on both sides. And I was like, fucking hell, I spent a lot of money on this. What a waste of money. And I should have known then, and I should have warned everybody, but I just thought I got a bad batch. And it turns out that it's going all the way up to the top and all the way up to test level. So I'm sorry I didn't step in sooner. And as ever, most things in this world are my fault. Well, we'll come back to the cricket balls in the near future, but we do need to move on to the white ball. And the news that has filtered through today that Owen Morgan is going to step down as the England white ball captain. As I say, we're recording Monday night, so we'll wait to hear what Owen Morgan says, his reasonings and why he's doing it now. But let's just reflect on him, really. And we're talking about what Brendan McCullum's doing for the Red Bull team at the minute. But I don't think any of it would be possible if it weren't for what Owen Morgan's done with the white ball team over the last decade or so. Finny, obviously, you know him very, very well. He's probably, when all the dust has settled, when it's all said and done, he's probably one of the single most important people in English cricket history. I really don't think that's an exaggeration for how much he's changed the white ball team around. Probably when we look back in 30, 40 years, he might be the most important man for the English white ball game ever. He's been that important to that team because the team was at rock bottom, wasn't it?
Yeah, people might be playing for it. Of course it was at rock bottom.
God, they really were scraping the
ball. I think first and foremost, like the fact that the news has leaked, I think is pretty disrespectful. Because I think that if people at the top of the ECB can't keep like and show respect to people like Owen Morgan, who have dedicated so much of their life over the last 13 years of playing international cricket, if they can't let someone make their own announcement and have to leak that news to people, I think that's pretty embarrassing, first and foremost. But if it's correct and if it is announced tomorrow, as people do expect, then he'll most certainly go down as arguably the person who changed the game in this country the most for the better. And yeah, I'm not just saying that because he's one of my closest mates. I'm saying that because you look at the way and the position that he took over that team and the way that he transformed it and the way that he molded it into the team and the machine that it is now, that is going to make it so easy for the next person to come in and captain, because all of the precedents and all of the marks and have been set. And I also think that, yeah, the way that we're seeing this Test match team play is off the back of the freedom and the manner in which that white ball team has played for the last 7 years that he's been captain.
I mean, Daniel, you've obviously been around and seen, you know, you remember WG Grace and you've seen the entire development of English cricket. So maybe you'll think of some other names. But to me, he's sort of like an English white ball Mike Brearley on acid is the best way to describe him in terms of just an unbelievable captain, except on top of that, an unbelievable batsman as well. I mean, let's not forget, I think sometimes it gets exaggerated that he's just the captain. This is the guy who's got the world record for the most sixes in an innings at a World Cup off Rashid Khan. He hit most of those as well. An unbelievable batsman, first and foremost. You don't play that many ODIs without scoring a hell of a lot of runs. And also just revolutionised the white ball game in England. I mean, just crazy to think how bad England were that World Cup before he took over.
He finishes with an average of tick under 40. All those sixes that you talk about. England's leading run scorer in ODIs. Over 7,000 runs in ODIs, but some of them for Ireland. And I think it's fascinating when you think back to Owen, and you look back at Owen Morgan's career, I don't think he is as loved as he should be. And I think part of that is because he's Irish. There was this business about, you know, did he sing the national anthem when he first started? Such nonsense, such absolute drivel. England have had, you know, Tony Greig was captain of England. He was from South Africa, for heaven's sake. Absolutely ridiculous. He did transform England. He was Paul Downton, I think it was, put faith in him in 2015 because he was part of that 2015 side and saw in Owen Morgan the chance that there might be a massive change in English cricket if it was given to Owen. You know, all the players that play for him talk about how he runs that team, really. You never talk about the coach. You never talk about the ODI coach. It's not necessary. Really, Owen Morgan is the coach. And in that series against New Zealand, obviously, Brendan McCullum links again. 400s. They started scoring 400 runs in an innings. When England, in the year before the World Cup campaign, they averaged 5.3 and over in one-day internationals. In the 7 years since, they've averaged 6.3 and over. And that's playing crazy cricket. So sometimes, you know, they've been bowled out for 200. So you've got to factor that into the average. The reality is that most of the time, if you go and watch England play ODI cricket, they'll score 350 plus runs. That's ridiculous. You know, it's a complete revolution. I can't think of anyone who gets close to it. Adam Holyoake sort of nearly did in the 1990s with the Sharjah team and that kind of thing. But the selectors didn't keep faith in him. They wanted to go back to the normal shibboleths. Mike Gatting did a bit in the mid-1980s. England were very good at one-day cricket in the mid-80s. appeared in multiple World Cup finals, but kept losing those finals. But Morgan has done something different. He's basically dragged the rest of world cricket along. So in that year before 2015, when England averaged 5.3 and over, the rest of the world was averaging about 5.4 and over. And England was like sixth out of the top eight nations. Now, England averaged 6.3 and over, the rest of the world averages about 5.6 and over. So they sort of pulled them up there somewhere, but that still means that England averaged 35 runs a game more than anyone else. He's got an unbelievable win-loss average, and that's with a team that came from nowhere, a terrible team, notwithstanding Finney's presence, I'm sure. But it was, you know, it wasn't that the team was terrible, actually, it was the attitude was terrible, and what they were trying to achieve was terrible, but he has transformed that. He's turned Jason Roy into a world-class player. Jason Roy got out to a horrible shot off his like second ball in one day cricket. It was like, don't worry about it. You're trying to do the right thing, just didn't work. Do it again next time, you'll hit it for four. It's that attitude. It's basically Bazball before Bazball.
It really is. And like I said, I don't think the current Bazball would be possible without this. If you look at the players doing it, it's Johnny Bairstow, it's Ben Stokes, who have played under Morgan. Joe Root's played a lot of white ball cricket for England. It's not a coincidence that those guys are the ones that are so good at putting this Baz ball into practice. Owen Morgan's... Okay,
here's an idea for you, Toby.
Right.
Sangakkara said it today, suggested it today. Butler, if you're going to go full Baz ball, Butler to open a batting.
Well, now, you know what? We haven't got time, but I do want to talk about this further down the line at some point, but we all want to come back to this point because those names that have failed at the top of the order, yeah, your Hales, your Roys, your Vinces, and all those people we tried who failed, would Josh Butler suddenly be an absolute bloody well-beater? Because if Johnny Bairstow is good at Bazball, then you can guarantee that Josh Butler's good at Bazball. But we'll come back to that point. But it's a very good point. We'll stick a fork in that for now, Norcross. But I don't hate where you're going with that. However, listening to McCullum after the test series today, and I thought he was brilliant, by the way that he spoke, he is going to show a lot of faith in players like Zach Crawley and people like that. And put a lot of faith in them. So I don't think he's going to just suddenly bring those players in, but it'll be interesting to see what he does further down the line. Now, very quickly, the reason we haven't gone into too much detail on the England women's test match that's happening is because obviously it's only currently the end of the first day's play. However, it is worth mentioning that friend of the podcast, Kate Cross bowled absolutely brilliantly, 17 overs, 4 for 63. However, if you don't know the end of the first day's score, it was 284 all out South Africa. But it was now I never say her name correctly, but it's Marie-Zanne Kapp. Yes.
Well, what's hard about Marie-Zanne
Kapp? I always put the Z before the I, but it's Arthur. So I go for
Marie-Zanne Kapp.
I know Marie-Zanne Kapp, who batted unbelievably well, 150, and we talked about Bazball. She scored at an absolute rate as well. She scored it at just over 200 balls as well. So that test match is shaping up very nicely. But we'll do it in much more detail next week. The one thing that I do need to talk about before I let you both go is our favourite player in world cricket. And I'm talking, of course, about
Ebadot Hussain.
Ebadot Hussain.
What's he done?
Now, so if you are new to the podcast and you're wondering what on earth I'm talking about, Ebadot Hussain is a cricketer who has played quite a few test matches now for Bangladesh. He's currently just finished his 16th test match for Bangladesh. And he is the worst batsman ever, statistically. He has a batting average of 1. He's got a higher score of 4. That is coincidentally when he hit A4, his one and only boundary in test cricket. He scored 12 runs in 26 innings with 14 not outs. And I've got to say, bowling hasn't got much better. He's got a bowling average of 54, and that's despite taking 9 in one game. So he's an interesting cricketer, is Ebadot Hussain. Well, Bangladesh have just played West Indies in a test match. They got thumped. They lost by 10 wickets to the West Indies. However, a couple of things I need to bring out about this. First of all, in the first innings, Ebadot Hussain batted at 9. Who on earth was at 10? And who was it, 11? Stevie Wonder.
Well, tell us. Who was
well,
that?
I can tell you that it was Shorafal Islam and Khaled Ahmed who batted behind Ebadot Hussain.
Shorafal Islam is nothing like as bad as Ebadot Hussain.
Weirdly, Shorafal was down
on the... Is he a night watcher?
He's down on the team sheet to bat at nine, was Shorafull Islam, but Ebadot strolled out to the crease and he finished the innings 21 not out. Ebadot has said. I mean,
21?
21 not out. Now, he then went wicketless, and then in the second innings, he got a duck. But that's not the point. The point is that Ebadot Hussain got a 21 not out. Now, Finney, as you go back into your four-day game with Sussex, surely you can take some confidence from the performance of Ebadot Hussain and channel some of that into your performance.
Yes, I can try my hardest. I mean, seems like it's something to be celebrated, the fact that he scored a few runs. I could do with a few tomorrow, although I'm hoping I don't bat tomorrow. That'd be lovely. I'd love to see Mohammed Rizwan peel off a double hundred, because it'd be very entertaining to watch as well. But yeah, I certainly will be channeling my inner Ebadot to try and pepper that short boundary.
Can we please try and get this trending with all three of our listeners? Can just the hashtag be more Ebadot become a fit? Just, you know, some people ask, what would Jesus do? I'm going to start asking, what would Ebadot do in all life scenarios?
I think, yeah, spot on. I think we should also ask WG Rumble Pants to make a painting of Finney's inner Ebadot. What Finney's Iber Ebadot looks like, I do not know. I mean, but it's a little bit disappointing though, isn't it? Because he got 21 on out and a duck. So now he's got 33 runs in 13 innings, right? So he now averages 2.5.
No, he's got 33 in, complete innings. Yeah, complete innings. Yes. Yes. So
33 and 13. So he's averaging basically 2.56 or so, right? So is he no longer the worst batter of all time, even though he clearly is? How many fours did he get in that 21? How many balls did he face? Toby, I want details.
I'm sorry, but
have you got to find it?
I've left that scorecard because I went looking for Chris Martin, the New Zealand cricketer, who notoriously was the worst batsman ever.
You had to bowl an in swinger. You had to bowl an in swinger to get Chris Martin to outside edge it. That's how bad he was.
Was that genuinely a discussion that you had as a team?
Yeah, yeah. Tim Murta was bowling like big booming away swingers to him, and he literally wasn't in the same postcode as them. And then he was like, fuck it, I'm going to try an in-swinger. And he outside-edged it to the keeper.
Well, the reason it took me so long to Google Chris Martin is there's some other Chris Martin who apparently is in quite a big band that seems to come up first on Google before you get to Chris Martin, the cricketer. But he played 126 innings and finished his career with a batting average of 2.36 in Test match cricket.
Oh, he's below Ebadot.
So he's below Ebadot. So we need Ebadot to get some more ducks.
I think one more duck will get him below Chris Martin, is my feeling.
We should get Chris Martin and Ebadot on here.
Maybe two.
At some point. Yeah. Not that we have that sort of clout. We can't even get half the Middlesex or Sussex players and Finney's best mates of them.
Well, you say that.
I just don't ask them because it's embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Come and have a chat with my granddad and my ginger bald brother. No, I'm all right, thanks.
Actually, I do have Tamsin Greg coming on so that we can do an absolute side-by-side, you know, check it out on Zoom, whether or not they do look the same.
What, Finney and Tamsin?
Yeah.
Yeah, they are identical. That's a very good point. Well, anyway, I'll say goodbye, but I'll leave you with the exciting news about Ebadot Hussain ringing in your ears. So wherever you're listening to this podcast and whatever you're up to at the moment, just if you face any challenges and tribulations this week in the workplace or at home, just stop. Take a breath and ask yourself, what would Ebadot do?
We forgot to mention the young lad Harvey who watched the game against the Surrey versus Sussex game.
Oh yes, no, you forgot.
Oh, sorry.
I put it on the group, and I thought the person who leads the bloody podcast.
I'm just about to leave the meeting. Sorry, what are you talking about? Surrey and Sussex. Did they play?
Oh God, we nearly didn't mention the fact that Finney ended Surrey's unbeaten season. What are we doing? Surrey were on course to go their longest ever unbeaten season ever, and Stephen Finn Sussex put an end to that. First of all, thank you so much for that, Finney. I forgot I thanked you on the group, but thank you so much. From everybody at Zero Ducks Given for that. But yes, so Finney, you met a lovely young kid at the cricket who listens to the podcast. He's 11 years old.
What? No, he looks 11 years old.
He shouldn't be listening to this podcast if he's 11 years old.
Well, no, and that's why it's made me wary about my language maybe this week and moving into the future, that that young Harvey may be influenced by comes out of our mouths. Yeah, sorry, Harvey. So he asked me to mention him on here, and he was a very affable, lovely young lad who asked me for a cap after the game, actually, and unfortunately the budget doesn't allow us to give away caps here at Sussex. So sorry, mate, maybe at the end of the season, but thank you for listening, and hope your parents don't find out.
you don't get that at Surrey, do you? They've always got the budget for hats at Surrey. Now,
I think we could afford a hat at Surrey. Yes, I'd like to think we could do that for a youngster, for an 11-year-old.
Glad you've mentioned this, Finny, because actually we...
Join Surrey, Harvey. Whatever you think about Sussex now, I get that, but... Like, you're 11 years old. You could live to be 90, 100. You could have 89 lovely years with Surrey. Why waste time with Sussex? Look, they won't even give you a hat.
Now, I'm so glad that this story has come up, because that reminds me of a message that was sent to us on Twitter this week. At Zero Ducks Pod on Twitter and Instagram, by the way. And I think we still have a TikTok account that we set up when we first launched. However, from Matthew, who messaged us saying, "Good morning, Toby and Daniel. You will notice that I have ignored Stephen from my greeting, just as he ignored my son and me at Sophia Gardens a couple of Sundays ago. My son is 11. He listens along to the podcast." Again, I'm staggered that young children listen to this, and I apologise for everything that we've ever said.
Yeah,
Daniel Norcross weeing in a jerry can last week.
Oh, God, yes.
However, apparently his son was trying to get your attention at the Sussex Glamorgan game, and you completely blanked him, Finny. What do you have to say for yourself?
Well, if it was the game where I went for 17 off the 19th over to lose the game, then I may have been in a mildly angry mood when walking up the stairs and may have not quite registered people calling my name or asking for a picture or to tell me how bad my granddad is on the podcast. I don't register those things when I've just bowled an over like that. So, I apologise profusely. And the next time I'm in Sophia Gardens, as long as I've not gone for 17 off the 19th over, I'll be happy to do whatever you please.
No, Finny, we're here to grow the game, right? It's not about your 17. It's not about whether you win or lose. You have a responsibility to the nation.
When you were
hit for 29 by John Simpson, I'd like to think you still signed the occasion.
Was it 29?
Or did you just 29 or five balls? Or did you just nut them? Just give them like a gobbles kiss. What did you do?
I don't know. I put that out of my mind. Yeah, thanks for reminding me yet again.
So he's 29, yes.
You made me realise why I don't like you. Yeah. I bowled one no ball.
I'll tell you what... I'll tell you what the key here is, because Brendan McCullum got absolutely stuck into Finney's bowling once for New Zealand, and now he's created Bazball. And when one day Brendan McCullum steps aside or he goes to New Zealand and takes Bazball over there, we need to go to the next cab off the rank of people that have spanked Finney everywhere. And John Simpson takes over from Brendan McCullum coaching the test side. This is perfect.
Batting against Finney might be the inspiration for people.
Hasn't this podcast run its course? It's about an hour and 10 minutes now. Let's just wrap it up.
Anyway, thank you very much for listening. No matter what age you are, we can't afford to lose any listeners. So thank you very much for listening. We'll try and work on our potty mouths. And we will hopefully have your company again next week. And Finney promises in the future, as long as he hasn't just been spanked for a load of runs to lose the game, that he will say hello to all our listeners. Chaps, lovely to see you. See you next week. Be more Ebbadot.
Be more Ebbadot.
Farewell.
Sports Social Podcast Network.